All right, you're live in the Arms Room with Glenn.
And Drew.
And all that excitement, it's just dripping from your microphone. All right, we're coming to you in the present from the past of the future.
You nailed it.
Nailed it this time. Perfect.
Nailed it.
First time ever, and I nailed it. So another pre-recorded show. That's a couple weeks in a row of pre-recorded shows for us. We apologize if that hurt your feelings too much, but
I'm not apologizing.
We have lives and stuff. We got things we got to do.
We're probably sitting on the beach in Florida right now.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So, let's see. No news. No idea what's...
We can't tell future past.
No idea. People are still being insane. People are still, some people are wearing masks, some people are not. People are acting like whether you wear a mask or not makes you some kind of either warrior of liberty or enemy of the state or whatever. People are still involving themselves in other people's problems. Politicians are still crooked as fuck. People are still listening to crooked ass politicians. What else is happening? Taxes are still a thing. Pedophiles are still happening, and no one seems to give a shit about it.
Birds aren't real.
Birds aren't real. Just government spies. It's the whole thing. So there's that. I have no idea what else the hell is going on.
Everything's burning.
Everything's on fire. It could possibly be, right? Right now we're sitting here recording a show for 2 weeks in the future. It's possible that when this show actually is supposed to be playing, the internet is no longer in existence and we're fighting in the street. I'm just kidding. It's not going to happen. It's totally not going to happen. And I don't want it to happen either.
Can we have it for like 5 hours?
I like.
Like a little window of five
hours? I like pooping on toilets sometimes. I don't mind pooping outside, but I like sometimes close the door and poop on a toilet.
Can we just have like 5 hours?
Just 5 hours,
chaos?
Like a freebie, the purge.
Yeah.
Purge, everyone's like, who would you kill first? I'm like, I can't say.
I got things to do.
I can't say. Would be a politician? Whatever. Whatever you think. That's what I'll do. Okay? How about that? Redwire Gear Moment. We'll just jump right into that. Brought to you by redwiregear.com. Think of what your gear says about you. What does your everyday carry gear say about you? How much information does it give out about you? You like to wear gun shirts, gun hats, got a bunch of stickers all over the back window of your vehicle. Every time you put on a piece of gear, is it multicam or all your backpacks tactical looking with PAL's webbing and patches?
It could be a whole
patches
show
all over
in
the place.
Itself.
It could be. But what does your gear say about you? What kind of lifestyle do you live? Can you go unnoticed into a crowd?
According to you, I'm a soccer mom.
That was a long time ago, and I stand by the statement. So think about what your gear says about you. Every time you put something on, what is this saying about me? What is this showing the world about me if I was being observed? Sometimes you want to send that message. Sometimes you don't, especially if you're going into unknown territory or into a new place that you don't really have great intel on. So something to think about. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Today's topic: why you need to know how to put needles in people. Now, there's a couple of things that I'm talking about here. The first is invasive trauma interventions, like the kind of stuff we teach over at Independence Training. The second is the application of it, all right? And so we're going to keep this pretty basic. The last time I did this show, I personally actually ended up getting attacked on a paramedic-only Facebook page where
people... Oh, this was years and years and years ago, though, wasn't
it? It was a few years ago, yeah. It was actually Adele, one of our other instructors, that brought it to my attention. And it was funny because I was actually, when I got the notification about the... I was actually working as a camp medic in a backcountry camp, and and these guys were on there talking about how insane I was for being willing to put IVs in people in the woods and how it was crazy that we even think we should be doing this. I have a prepared statement here. Let me I'm gonna. Isn't that what they do on the news? Okay, I'm gonna.
Isn't that a calendar? Isn't that a?
It is a calendar, but it's supposed to simulate a stack of papers like I'm organizing my notes, Drew.
Okay.
All right, here we go. I have a prepared statement. My prepared statement. Dear haters, fuck you.
You should have left.
Did that come across?
I don't think so. I think it's too loud.
Was that too loud?
I think it was.
Let me say it from farther back. Fuck you! Is that better?
Probably.
Did that sound better because I got farther away from the microphone? Let me be clear about stuff. I really couldn't care less about what people think about what we teach when it comes to saving people's lives. We have people we have students who've saved other people's lives in a variety of different circumstances. So if you're a professional working paramedic or doctor or nurse or whatever, and you don't think regular lay people should know skills, fuck you.
Yeah.
Stop listening to the show. It's not for you. The show isn't for you. Go listen to your self-righteous, egotistical, self-touting, masturbatory podcast. I'm sure there's plenty of them out there. Go listen to that shit. Go listen to doctors and paramedics and firemen talk about how wonderful they are.
Stroke each other's dicks.
Yeah, go for it. Go listen to that bullshit. Don't listen to the show anymore. It's not for you. We didn't make this show for you. I didn't make my train for you. I didn't build this company for you. I built this for people who care about learning how to take care of themselves. Self-reliance is important. It's literally in our ethos. We have three things in our ethos: confidence, self-reliance, and American spirit. If you think things should be kept from other Americans, you don't know anything about any of those three things. So, yeah, if people want to talk about our classes on little private groups and, oh, I can't believe they're teaching this, and, oh, I can't believe this guy, because I told a story about how I put an IV in a guy in the back country. I can't believe that's so crazy. Oh, whatever. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because I'll start insulting people, but I just don't give a shit. There's plenty of paramedics and doctors and nurses and firemen who support us and support what we do and want people to learn, because they understand that the more people know, the more live patients they're going to have to work on. And that's important. That's how they get to do their jobs.
I like – you know what's really funny though?
What's that?
I like how paramedics and EMTs and nurses, they carry around IV bags and everything, but they won't stick it in somebody under a crisis, but they will if someone's hungover.
Yeah, right. Well, then how many?
Riddle me that.
It's a lot like this. Like, I know a lot of cops who don't carry off duty. They carry guns, right? I know plenty of medical people who don't even have a trauma kit on them or with them, or whose idea of trauma is very, very different than our idea of trauma. So suffice this to say, let me put out my disclaimer, all right? And haters, if you're listening, get ready. You're not going to fucking like this, all right? If you're even still listening, which I told you to fucking turn it off. So if you're still listening, because maybe you just opened your mind just a smidgen to the idea that you don't know everything, check this out. Here's our disclaimer. Needles and hoses ought to be used for the people that you care about the most. Now, sometimes you might find it in a certain situation to want to do this to someone that you may not know very well. Like the story I told the last time we did this show, which was a while back, about running into a guy who was super, super sick and putting an IV starter into him because he was getting really dehydrated and he had several miles of hiking back out to do, and I needed to be able to stick him, because I knew that by the time he got back there, veins collapsed and it might even pull out the start. It's possible the start wouldn't even stayed in or whatever. But at least now, if he can get back to the trailhead and he can get to a higher level of care and they get a good, you know, blood flash on that, then they have an opportunity to maybe already have a vein they can stick it in, right? Or not. I don't know. I didn't give him my contact information, and HIPAA law prevents me from calling anywhere and finding out, so I have no idea what happened next. I don't really care. That's not the point. I did what I knew how to do, and I helped somebody. Whether I did it under the right circumstances or not, I don't really care about someone else's opinion on. That was my circumstances. I was there. I knew what was going on. I saw what was going on, and that's what I did. And I put several IVs in people for all kinds of reasons, from hangovers, as Drew mentioned, to more emergent type situations. And I'm okay with continuing to do it. And I continue to have those kinds of supplies around. And I continue to keep saline and lactated ringers and things like that with us. And I continue to have that skill set. And I'm okay with if people don't like it. I don't give a shit. That's like one of the biggest problems I think we run into when it comes to needles and hoses type stuff, is people are like, well, what will other people, what are you here for? Are you here for social media likes? Get the fuck out of this class. What are you even here for?
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of – we don't have those kind of clients, but I hear those kind of discussions a lot. Gee, I said fuck a lot already on this show. I've already hit my quota. Do I have a quota?
I don't know. Do I have a quota? Because I think I say it more than you.
You maximize your quota every time. There used to be a time in the arms room where we weren't allowed to cuss, and that was difficult.
I'm glad I wasn't show producer.
They used to have to bleep us out. It's pretty funny. Back when the network was a little different. But whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Take a Altoid and calm the fuck down.
Yeah. I'm taking my peppermint. Everyone's always like, why do you have Altoids around? This peppermint chills me out, man. Sometimes I eat these things by the handful. Literally in our office cabinet here, we have like 6 bins of Altoids. People think I'm joking around. I'm not, man. Peppermint chills you out. So there's my disclaimer. Moving on. Understand that if you put needles and hoses in somebody, you are assuming a massive amount of personal liability. Go to prison kind of liability. At the worst, at the least, maybe pay lots and lots and lots of money in both civil fines and court settlements kind of liability. This is dangerous shit. You don't just do this to anybody. You better be sure. You better fully understand the context and the reason why you're doing it. It doesn't take a medic god or a doctor to be able to perform these skills. It just doesn't. We teach the class to regular folks who have been through a certain level of training with us already. And all they do is do well in class. They perform well. Drew had the opportunity to take a class with a friend of hers at the end of last year.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
What do you think of performing these skills? And I'm talking about the invasive trauma interventions class that we teach over at Independence Training. And I'm not the lead instructor for the class at all. It's
Adele. You weren't even there. You were watching the Gator.
Yeah, I think I was watching kiddos. But yeah. And I wasn't even there. And with those classes, look, I have the skill set, but that's out of my lane as far as enough experience to be an instructor. So I step out of the invasive trauma stuff. I know how to do it in my own context, but yeah, I don't teach that stuff. Now, you had the opportunity to take it. Adele was your instructor. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the skill sets? I mean, let me ask you in a different question. As a soccer mom, all right, is it
do you want to die now or later?
as a lay responder.
Our kids play baseball. Right. Can I be a baseball mom?
As a baseball mom, all right?
Thank you.
How easy were the skills to learn? And we'll talk about what the skills were specifically, but how easy were the skills to learn?
Easy.
Like, did you find a difficulty in performing any of the invasive skills?
No.
Did anyone else in the class really struggle?
No. We didn't have any person – because I, you know, debriefed with Adele afterwards, and we didn't have any person that was like, I don't know about that person. The person who sucked the most at doing IVs was a nurse.
Yeah. Well, and how many IVs does that nurse do in her nursing job?
Maybe she wasn't a nurse.
She might have been a nurse.
Maybe.
She might have been a nurse.
I think she was a phlebotomist.
There's no way she's a phlebotomist and couldn't do
it. Well, she was retired.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's possible.
I don't remember. But Caitlin was a phlebotomist. Mm-hmm. So she – and even then, she was like, we're doing what in the class?
And really, if you go into this kind of training and learning these kinds of skills – and there's a couple other organizations that teach this stuff in addition to us to, like, lay responders.
I think she was a nurse.
She could be, because there's so many different types of nurses.
I think she was a nurse.
You know?
But, you know, Adele did say usually people who have a medical profession background are the worst to teach because they think they know everything, which she, you know, was that. But overall, there wasn't a single person that could not fully understand what was going on, and everybody literally did everything great.
And we typically run like 8 to 10 people in the class. We've had small class before, like 4 or 5. But we max that class out at 10 because we want a ton of hands-on time from instructors. So, you know, there's not a ton of people in these classes. They're relatively small. But no one really had a hard time getting the skills. Mm-hmm. Could you, as a mom, as a concealed carrier, as just kind of a generally prepared person, could you see the context of application of these skills?
Yeah.
I mean, you could see where there's a position where you're like, I might actually have to use this.
Oh, with our kids? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the tools that you would have to add to your kit, with the exception of adding lots of fluids, which are just heavy and bulky.
Mm-hmm.
But the other tools for the other concepts, lots of tools?
No.
Not really more?
No.
And not really a whole lot more expensive either?
No. I mean, if you think about it, needles – or small little packs they come in. So you could pack those pretty well easily in your IFAC. Then you have your hoses. Like you said, the biggest, bulkiest thing is just carrying around the fluids. But, I mean, the
But like a Krite kit, NPAs, decompression needles, other stuff you
learned
about.
The only thing with the NPAs is you just have to figure out the size of like what every size is for your family, what they would be.
If you want to do it perfectly and not just be ramming hoses in people's noses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be – that would be my only thing is I'd have a couple different sizes of NPAs so I'd kind of know exactly who to stick someone with. But if it's, you know, again – would I perform something like this on a perfectly random stranger? Probably not. Would I do it to our kids? Absolutely. If it means saving their life, absolutely.
So with that in mind, let's talk about those four skills. The first of the four invasive type skills that we consider important are the four invasive skills that we teach in invasive trauma. Now, interestingly enough, in the old days of IFAC Lifesaver, 10 years ago, we used to demonstrate nasal pharyngeal airways. We used to just demonstrate NPAs.
Uh-huh.
We would teach decompression needles as part of chest seal application. And in some classes, we would do IVs in a select few. We removed those elements after literally just like a year of teaching it. We removed all those things from IFAC Lifesaver because we wanted people to really be able to focus on just the life-saving concepts and give us more time for scenarios. And those other skills really dipped into scenario time and sometimes prevent us from even doing scenarios. So, you know, early IFAC Lifesaver classes did not have the kinds of scenarios that we have now. So the class has definitely evolved over the years. And then we created its own class, Invasive Trauma Interventions. God, that's probably been, you know, at least 6 years ago, if not more, 7 years ago maybe. We built it around the four skills we felt were both realistic for average people to do, contextual for average people to do. We could come up with realistic reasons for them to do it. And they could easily procure and carry the tools. And these four skills are a nasal pharyngeal airway, a decompression needle or needle thoracostomy, a cricothyroidotomy, and intravenous fluids or IVs. Why did we choose these four things and why you need to know how to do them? If you understand basic lifesaver concepts of like stopping bleeding, starting breathing, good assessment, you know, the full concept of March, you can, you know, add in some casualty evacuation, like you can handle yourself pretty well under an emergency medical situation, you definitely need to consider these invasive concepts. Nasal pharyngeal airways. Now understand this is our application of them, all right? This is not like you have to have these tools or else everyone in your family is going to die. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is this is our application of what we teach. NPAs are really good if you have somebody that is going unconscious often. You have to walk away from someone that's unconscious or may go unconscious. You yourself may go unconscious, right? Remember, you are the number one patient. So you get hurt. You may have to put an NPA in yourself, and you should be able to put an NPA in yourself. The concept is the same. It feels weird putting in yourself, I'll tell you that.
I definitely was a bleeder.
Yeah. Oh, some people just bleed like stuck pigs, man.
That was me.
Yeah. Just because you're breaking all those blood vessels. Yeah. You know, you might have used too big of an NPA on you, too. But
yeah, that was the problem. The one that Caitlin shoved in me was a little too big.
It was 28.
Mm-hmm.
You
got to
start with standard
28s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 28 is probably too big for your nose. But anyways, so that's a great skill. It's something that bypasses the tongue and rests against the back of the throat, allowing a very small but relatively secure airway to remain open. So if someone goes unconscious, they don't completely pinch their airway off, right? And if they go unconscious and the tongue falls against their throat, they don't completely pinch their airway off. Now, we used to think that there was a contraindication, meaning there was a reason not to do it, if there was any kind of basal fracture damage or if there was any kind of skull compromise at all, because that was this one case study specifically from, I want to say, Afghanistan, where a medic put one in an Afghani and freaking poked him in the brain and killed him. I was always kind of skeptical of the science behind that and how the data was collected because it was always kind of a lot of hearsay. Like I heard several different versions of the story, even in official reports. Really, at this point nowadays, they're like, look, if they have that kind of damage in the field, they're probably dying anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying kill them faster, but if their airway is compromised, that's definitely going to kill them. So you're going to have to do something. And if you don't have anything else, then an NPA is a thing you can do. Like Drew said, you may have to consider carrying around multiple different sizes, especially if you got kiddos.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, when I was first taught NPAs many moons ago, it was like, yeah, just use spit or, you know, dip it in their own blood. Don't do that. Just take a little pack of freaking KY jelly, petroleum jelly, Vaseline, whatever you want to call it, and take that shit and freaking just wrap it around and tape it to your freaking NPA, man. Jelly that bad boy up. Spitting on it or blood dries out too fast, causes a lot of friction, can cause permanent damage. Like, just jelly that bad boy up. Lube that thing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So NPAs are beneficial to that extent. Super small, super inexpensive, super easy to carry.
Yeah.
I do not have an NPA with me everywhere I go. I don't carry one in my ankle kit or anything like that. Some of our guys do. That's fine. I carry them in my larger kits. I do find them to be important. Moving on to decompression needles or chest darts, needle thoracostomies, whatever you want to call them. Chest darts are utilized after we've sealed the box. So once we've sealed up all the holes on the thoracic cavity with chest seals, the air is now trapped inside and is still compromising the chest cavity. We need to release the pressure. It can typically be released one of four ways. Needle decompression, finger thoracostomy, chest tubes, and death. You want to try to avoid that last one. It really makes everything else much more difficult, right? So the easiest one to carry in the field and perform is the chest decompression or the chest dart. Chest darts nowadays, you know, we started with them. They were very, very small a long time ago. They used to be like 2 3/4 inches. They were, you know, standard 16-gauge catheter. That was no good. They went to 14-gauge catheters, 3 1/4 inch. That got through, you know, heavier chest walls, and that was better. Nowadays, all the recommendations are 10-gauge needles, 3 3/4 inch, like the Spear, for example, from North American Rescue. The regular decomp needles that are 10-gauge are still 3 1/4 inch, I believe, or 3 1/2 inch, something like that. I want to say it's 3 1/4 inch, and my mind's slipping right now. But 10-gauge is the recommendation now. And the recommendation now is basically if it's worth sealing, it's probably worth darting. Now, if I'm en route to the hospital or they're en route to me very quickly, am I going to dart someone on the ball field in the middle of town? Probably not. But if they've had a compromised chest cavity and they're having a hard time breathing and I'm repositioning them, I've sealed them up and I'm repositioning them and it's not working and I've done everything I can, I can't make it better, I'm going to dart them. Now, who do I dart? Like, who do I NPA? Well, I'm talking about the people I love. I'm not going to go around sticking darts in people I don't freaking know. It's too much risk. Now, there's no contraindication. Again, there's no reason that we shouldn't dart somebody. You can dart somebody. Anytime you can dart somebody. You're not going to cause a tension pneumothorax by trying to prevent one with a dart. So absolutely use a dart.
Yeah.
How hard did people find it once we were actually, especially on the couple different simulators that we have in class, how hard was it really for people to learn how to dart?
Not hard at all.
So freaking easy.
Yeah, super, super easy.
It's so freaking easy. We're always using ancillary location now on the side. We don't use the old primary location of median nipple line or mid-clavicular line.
We did learn that, though.
Yes.
We did absolutely learn the old school.
We're just not doing it anymore.
No, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everything now is on the side, basically in the armpit between the 5th and 6th rib.
Yeah.
So also another caveat. Don't take anything we're saying on the show for training, okay?
Yeah.
A refresher, maybe, but maybe. And even that, not really. Just the reasons why we're doing this stuff. Darts are easy to carry around.
Mm-hmm.
Anything worth darting once is probably worth darting twice, so
mm-hmm.
I'd like to have 2 darts instead of just one. If someone has a massive chest compromise, you might end up darting more than that. So make sure that you have good darts.
And a really good tool, if you haven't downloaded it, is that Deployed Medicine app.
Mm-hmm.
They've got videos and everything else like that if you want to re-go over. If you've taken any type of training and you know what we're talking about, that's a great app to go back because they actually have videos of exactly everything that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a great job.
It's a good
job.
Tool to have on your phone regardless.
And if you're on Instagram, make sure you follow their page, Deployed Medicine.
Yeah.
Good shit, man. Really, really good stuff. So that's the second skill.
The third skill that we go over is the cricothyroidotomy, or the crike, we're going to call it for short.
Mm-hmm.
The crike is an invasive airway through the crike membrane, essentially just below the voice box. Here's an interesting divine intervention story for you. All right. Why does the crike membrane exist? Nobody knows. Here's what we do know. It's a really easy way to bypass a compromised upper respiratory airway that will heal afterwards. But there's no reason for it to exist. There's no reason we're supposed to have this little soft spot right there that's so easily just cut and raked and a tube dropped in it.
Maybe it's that's why it exists, so you can do that.
It's an interesting thing to think about, right? So the crike is a relatively easy skill to perform. It's another one of the skills that gets taught in ITI that people are like, wait, what? That's all there is to it? And you're like, yeah, man, that's all there is to it. Like, you hear about docs, you know, trauma docs and paramedics and combat medics doing it in the field with camelback hoses and, you know, a scalpel and a drinking tube kind of thing, like straws and all kinds of crazy shit. What you're doing is you're bypassing the upper respiratory. Could have massive facial trauma from a vehicle accident, an animal attack, anaphylactic shock, a variety of different things that mm-hmm. might cause a problem. So if that is actually a problem, you can't get – you can head tilt, chin lift, jaw thrust, NPA, OPA, all you want. There is no airway. It's not happening, man. You've got to go below that to access an emergency invasive airway. That's the crike. You can buy a good crike kit for like $50. Like I said, you could improvise them, but I would never recommend that. So you can buy a good crike kit. You know, a number of different companies make them. They're a great tool to have if you have the training. That's really what crikes are for. You have someone who's going in anaphylactic shock, man, you get them too late with epinephrine, it may not be enough.
Yeah.
And if the EpiPen doesn't work and you try to open the airway, there is no airway. You can't head tilt, chin lift, jaw thrust this person. There may not be an available airway, and you're basically just going to sit there and watch this person struggle and die unless you can get an invasive airway in there. You know, crikes can absolutely be done in the field. So crikes are important. I believe they're, again, a necessary tool and a necessary skill. Without it, you could watch someone just die before you, mm-hmm. and they're not hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, are there other things we have to be concerned with? Of course. Are there problems that can happen? Of course. With all these things, there's things that can go wrong. But if someone's dying because they don't have an open airway, and what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You just sit there and watch them die when you could do something else? That was like one of the worst thoughts I ever had as a father was, you know, when Garrett was born and I'm first night in the hospital, I'm holding this little baby. I'm all by myself and it's in the dark, right? It's that time of night you can't lie to yourself, you know, 2 to 3 a.m. We talked about that time on the mm-hmm. show before. I'm holding this little baby. It's his first night in the world, right? My first night as a dad. I'm holding this little guy. And I'm like, fuck. You know what I mean? What if something happens to this kid? I don't know what to do if he gets hurt. And that's really what propelled me into getting more involved in medicine was my kids. But I cannot imagine holding my kid while they die and think, oh, my God, I wish I would have not spent so much time talking shit on the internet, and I wish I would have spent more time actually learning real-world skills.
Yeah.
I wish I wouldn't have spent so much time following some stupid faggoty-ass professional sports team, and I would have spent more time actually learning useful skills. I wish I wouldn't have blown all my money on cool Gucci gun shit that does not improve my shooting at all.
Or my Cry Precision pants.
I wish I wouldn't have spent all this money on dumb shit in my life and wouldn't have spent $50 on a crike kit and a couple $100 on a class to learn how to use it. Because here's my kid dying of anaphylactic shock. I stuck him with the epi and it wasn't enough, or we forgot his epi, or it fell out of his, you know, pocket while he was running around the woods or whatever. And now he's dying and his upper airway is closed and ambulance is an hour and a half away because we're in the middle of the freaking woods playing as a family on a camping trip. And I don't know what to do. And now you just hold your kid while they die?
Yeah, thanks.
No thanks, man. That's never going to be me. And that's what I decided that night. It's never going to be me. I'm never going to be the person that holds their kid ever again and says, I don't know what to do with this thing. That's what propelled me into medicine to really start with. Yeah, I knew some stuff before that, but unless he got shot or exploded, I didn't really know what to do. And even then, it was pretty vague at best.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always been my concept of like, why would people not want to know these skills? Why would you not take the time to invest in these skills, a little bit of practice? It's crazy to me. The last thing we cover in that class is intravenous fluids. This is the one that always gets people fired up, which is surprising. The other things don't seem to get people as fired up as intravenous fluids.
Which is insane.
Well, we're not saying push meds, okay? There's a lot to pushing meds. You better freaking know what you're doing. Liquid meds is not something to mess around with. Meds in general, you don't want to mess around with. But proper dosages, proper meds, making sure this med doesn't counteract or contradict or conflict with this other thing that's in their body, that's important shit, man. That is doctor-level, paramedic-level stuff. Not that the average person can't know that stuff. Any of us can know that, but that is what they do. Let them do that, right? Let them do that. But when it comes to pushing simple fluids like lactated ringers and saline, sorry, man. This is basic level shit, guys. All right? This is basic level stuff. So you can get all the supplies. Everything I've mentioned is 100% available to purchase for the public. 100% available. So easy to get access to.
Wouldn't you want people to be trained versus just buying it and carrying it around?
You would think. The tactical medic, who's where we get most of our stuff over in Mesa, Arizona, he has everything I'm talking about. Yeah. You can literally buy everything. Saline IV starter kits, Crite kits, decomp needles, MPAs.
Yeah.
And gloves. This is also, this is one of those times where, you know, usually in medical class we'll be like, yeah, you don't really have to wear gloves if it's someone you know, someone you love, whatever. Gloves are to protect me, not them. I don't really care. Now we're wearing gloves to also protect them. If we have them, obviously. But it's like as soon as I'm starting to deal with maybe touching the inside of people's bodies, I need to put gloves on because now I do need to protect them. I can't introduce bacteria to the inside of their body, which has never seen bacteria before, very dangerous. So we really do want to learn how to do these skills with gloves on. So intravenous fluids, why are they important? Dehydration is the biggest need. Honestly, that's the biggest need. People want to go with the bleeding thing, but it's like, yeah, but the only thing that carries oxygen to the brain is blood. There's no other replacement for that. Now, there's a lot of, you know, work being done in the field right now with TXA and whole blood, but until that starts to find its way to the more mainstream, that's not even worth talking about right now. In the meantime, we just have regular fluids. All that adding fluids to the blood system does is increase the pressure. It does not increase the blood's capability to carry oxygenated cells to the brain. So I have to – only blood carries oxygen to the brain. Saline, lactate ringers don't. You can have someone who's bled a lot and you can increase all the pressure you want in their body. If they don't have enough actual blood in their body to carry oxygenated, you know, blood to the brain, they're going to die or start going brain dead pretty quickly. Even if I get them, quote unquote, back up to pressure, even if I get them back up to 5 or 6 liters of fluid in their body, it's not going to be enough. But what it's really good for is rehydration. It's really good for cooling overheated people down or warming cold people up. Introducing both cool and warm, not hot and cold, but cool and warm fluids into the body is a great way to get someone out of shock and hypothermia. With warm fluids, mm-hmm. It's a phenomenal way. I mean, you can even buy inline heaters that will heat the blood up to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. They're awesome, man. North American Rescue sells a badass one. It's just an inline heater. You literally clamp it on the hose just before the blood goes in, or just before the fluid, I mean, goes in the body. Boom, it's going to spike it up to 100 degrees. It shoots in the body, and by the time it gets in the body, starts circulating, it gets it down to a nice, easy 98.6, and you can keep someone out of shock. You can keep someone from going hypothermic if they're in a really cold environment, or they're going hypothermic because of shock, loss of blood, mm-hmm. et cetera. Cool fluids have the obviously opposite effect for people who are overheating. I mean, it's not an uncommon thing for us as instructors. We did it at IDARM just a couple months ago for one of our ROs who was way overheating and pretty dehydrated. Yeah. You know, just because you've been working really hard that day where we just, no problem, man. We took them up to an IV and off we go. It's like we do that to ourselves when we're traveling and training. We're getting really tired and it's been hot and it's 2 or 3 days out there. Hell yeah, we're going back to the freaking hotel and hooking it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, dude, get some of these chilled fluids back in my body. Let me cool off. Let's get my body chill. Let's get some more fluids in my body. You're not going to rehydrate. You cannot drink water fast enough to rehydrate like you can rehydrate when the water goes straight into your blood system. And that's really what saline is water.
Yeah.
Right? you start adding things like lactated ringers and stuff like that, now you're going to also increase the electrolyte capabilities and of your body as well. So now your body's really getting rehydrated even better. But the capability of IV fluids, even to just add a start, to put an IV start in, right, just a capped needle is to say, or a capped catheter is now to say, all right, I have a site. Now we can get someone somewhere before their veins collapse. We can get an IV or we can get a catheter in them. Now when they get to that place, as long as we can keep that catheter relatively secured and straight, keep them from pulling out or ripping out or anything like that, we don't kink it. Now we can leave that thing open and we can get them to a place where they can go, hey, look, dude, an entry site, pow, and start pushing fluids. And in an emergency, they'll use it. Of course, if they can get their own stick, they're going to probably get their own stick. Probably not going to trust yours. But in an emergency, they'll use it. So if you can push your own fluids, even better. Dehydration, certainly blood loss, you know, a little minimal amount of blood loss, but dehydration, overheating, hypothermia, shock, things like that. Fluids can be a lifesaver. I don't think they're an immediate lifesaver. That's why we teach these – all four of these concepts are not something that's probably going to save someone's life in the next 5 to 10 minutes while you're initially dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
But from a prolonged care standpoint – and by prolonged, I mean anything more than about 10 or 15 minutes. From a prolonged care standpoint, these are potentially lifesaving interventions. This is why you need to know about them.
Yeah. I think it's really important.
They're easy to learn.
They are very easy to learn.
We teach them to all kinds of people. And we like to say that ITI is the needles and hoses class. You will see blood and some of it will be yours.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to see your own blood. Yep. You're going to see other people's real blood right now, right here.
Mm-hmm.
We have at least one person in class that seems like get a little lightheaded, get a little faint. Anyone in your class, did you guys have a
–
not a fainter, but a lightheaded person?
No, we didn't have anybody.
That's impressive, yeah.
But we had like a class of 8, I think it was. Mm. It was 8 or 9.
And we max it out at 10 anyway.
Yeah.
Usually there's at least one person who's like, oh, shit, I got to sit down. Like once the blood actually starts coming out.
But I'm the one that was the bleeder.
Yeah.
I remember when Mila came and she was like, oh, my.
Yeah.
Because you guys walked in like right as.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you were freaking bleeding all over the place.
Yeah.
So these are the skills that we think you ought to consider learning.
Yeah. It's especially if you do a lot of things like outdoors and hiking and you're kind of off on your own and you're not next – you can't get to a next level of care quick enough.
Mm.
Or if you're with your family camping, you know, that's huge. If you're in a remote location and you're with your family camping, you got to have these skills in order to really be prepared for anything. I mean, literally anything, especially for yourself, for your loved one, if you've got kids.
I'll tell you guys a story that actually spurred me on to create the ITI class. It's actually one of our old medics and still associates and still helps us with classes from time to time, though he is now a full-time fireman and involved in some other business stuff. But he still is very involved with the company. He's just not actively teaching. It's actually Matt Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
So Dobson and I actually built the ITI class based on stuff that we had already been teaching in IFAC. We peeled it out of IFAC. It just kind of sat dormant. We didn't really do anything with it. And then he and I kind of put it together. And this will be the last thing we'll say on the show here before we wrap it up. This is the story that really pushed me into wanting to build a class like this. Most people don't know is that every class we have usually has a personal catalyst from me. There's a reason I started teaching that program. It wasn't just because I was like, you know, it'll be fucking rad, bro, fucking teaching people how to shoot and shit. Like that's never happened for any class we've ever taught. I always have a personal catalyst for why we teach what we teach. And this one was I was reading a medical journal article written by a doctor who was at a family camp, like one of those big family church camps. So you're talking about lots and lots of people. Little off the grid, but still relatively easy access. His daughter was very allergic to a certain allergen. They carried 2 EpiPens. She was off with friends playing. He was off with friends chatting or whatever, doing dad shit. There was an emergency. He ran over. By the time he got to his daughter, she was already very swelled and was going into anaphylactic shock. He pulled out the one pen that she carried on her and stuck her with it. Symptoms did not reduce. he pulled out the pen that he carried for her. He always carried one on him for her and made her carry her other one, be responsible, right? She was 7 years old and stuck her with that, and symptoms did not reduce. So he did the best he could, try to hold her airway open, and the ambulance didn't even get there. Fire, technically, didn't even get there before she died. And so this doctor wrote it from this perspective, and it was a medical journal really written for medical professionals about his experiences in not being ready. He's like, if I was in an operating room, I could have saved her. But I wasn't in an operating room. I wasn't in a hospital. I wasn't in a clinic. I wasn't even in my office. And I realized I did not have the tools, though I had the skills, I had not the tools. He never thought about improvising anything because that wasn't his mindset. His mindset was not field medicine. And he was panicked. It was his own daughter. It was very different than just being a regular old patient. Yeah. And him holding his daughter while she died, I just, oh, my heart went out to this guy. He's writing this story, he's sharing this part of himself with someone else, you know, with everyone else. And I thought we could help people avoid this.
Yeah.
We could help people never have to deal with something like this. Is it likely to happen? No. Is it possible? It happens all the time. It just might not happen to you, but it is happening to somebody, even doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So learn these skills. Come train with us if you have the opportunity. Look up some of the other companies who might teach this information. I don't know many, but I do know there's a few out there. Triad Medical, certainly one of them. Prepared Medical Response, another organization that I know teaches the stuff. They're not here. They're out of state. So if you're elsewhere in the country, see if they're around. What's that?
Triads in Florida.
Yep, Triads in Florida. So something to, you know, take a look at. Prepared Meds up on the Northeast. So, you know, take a look. See what you guys can find. Hopefully there's someone in your area who can help you teach this. If you're in Texas, maybe look up Caleb over at Lone Star Medics. They may teach some of this information. I don't think the guys at Dark Angel teach this to this level. But certainly good medical training there regardless. So, you know, Odin Medical, they may teach this stuff. I'm not sure who else does it. But definitely look it up, man. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's really something you definitely need to seek out.
You have any questions about this? Email us. If you think we're crazy, email us. If you're some shit-talking paramedic or fireman or whatever, instead of going and jerking off your fireman buddies, send me a fucking email.
Yeah, don't be a bitch.
Like a goddamn adult. And let's talk about it. And I'll tell you more. And I'm happy to get into a in-depth, detailed discussion with you about a phone call with you. All right? I'm happy to do it.
We'll do it all on air.
I'm happy to do it, man. Learn these skills. They're critically important. All right.
And for everyone.
For everybody.
It shouldn't be just to an elitist group.
No. And your kids, man, they should know this, at least be exposed to it so that they know that it's a possibility, so as they grow older and can understand more, they can start doing the skills so that they don't die or someone they love doesn't die either because they were failed to be prepared. Remember, preparing the people around you is just as important as preparing yourself. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you, including classes like ITI. Get hosting information via email info@trainingaz.com. And remember that if you host us and it's an open enrollment class with at least 10 students for 2 days, you train for free. And it's really not hard to host us, especially for medical classes. Holy shit, is it easy to host us for medical classes. Shooting stuff's a little more difficult, still not hard, but you know, you got to get the ranges and all that shit. But medical classes, oh my God, we bring the classroom with us. All we need is a space. So if you're interested in bringing medical classes to your area, pow, it's the easy way to do it. info@trainingaz.com. Let's talk. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show. Please, we have so many listeners and like so few Instagram followers. I don't know how that's possible. We have a bunch of Facebook followers, like no Instagram followers. So Instagram, please follow us on The Arms Room, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows on the network that has supported us from day one. Can't say thank you ever to Adam Bird enough for giving us this opportunity and helping us grow this show over the last 5 years. Next week, we're going to be live again. And you guys are going to be able to see our studio live. So you're going to love it. I know you will.
Yeah.
Going to be awesome. We're going to be talking about standard response, the average engagements, and preparing to fail. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.